Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome back to the Lanterne Rouge Cycling Podcast for stage 11 of the Tour de France. Probably the most tranquil stage of the tour so far, I would say. Yeah, there's some nervous moments, but overall, I would say that the doziest stage. We'll get to my siesta and even my dream sequence in a second. From Clermont-Ferrand, which has probably shelled out half the town's annual budget for like 3.5 Tour de France stages, to Moulin, 180 kilometers. And listen, I thought this wasn't an easy parkour. I thought this could have been a sapping day in the legs because, yes, the first 27Ks are flat, but then there's two climbs separated by a little bit of flat. And, yeah, they're 2K 5%, then another 1.5 at 5%, then a descent straight into another 10 kilometers of climbing at over 4% with some bit steeper, then another descent, no flat, and then 1.2K 6%, and then another climb. So, really, between 27 and 70 k's to go, I thought a breakaway could really press on there, and that's quite a difficult start. And then it's lumpy all the way to the finish. Yes, it levels off, but also the wind direction was cross tailwind, largely actually tailwind, which suggested that, you know, it would be difficult to bring a group back. But Benji, I vastly overestimated the appetite for a breakaway, obviously, in the preview of this stage, which we did yesterday, because it never had a chance. Straight out of neutral, we could see that.
Yeah, I didn't really believe in a breakaway for the reason that we saw on, for example, the early week stage, the week one stage, where we also expected some action to happen and in a harder breakaway to form. Well, that didn't happen there. So I was like, if it didn't happen there, maybe the people still feel the same. And we had exactly that, a smaller breakaway. Amador Louvel, us going up the front, and not the greatest fight for the breakaway in the first place either, because there was a moment with Amador just riding in front of the peloton waiting for someone to join him because no one was coming. And then Louvel ended up joining him. And like, yeah, we know from that point onwards, there's going to be a straight up sprint. But also when it comes to, you said it a few times, you see these sprinter teams like Alpecin as paper tigers is the word I learned from you. Would you argue that's even more the case, knowing that Vanderpool hasn't looked the Vanderpool that he was in week one?
Well, Vanderpool's probably not going to pull the brake back, but yeah, like, they don't want to put more than Quinton Hermans on the front pulling all day. They don't want to put Dillier there if they don't have to. They'd rather use him with 10Ks to go. So, and the reason, okay, if this was stage three, of course, I would say the brake has no chance. Sprinter teams will go. But I thought now, at this point, the teams would be starting to adapt a little bit and say, if you're an Intermarché, in a mass group sprint after an easy day, what is Binnie's realistic chance to top three, let alone win? Pretty low, if we looked at his positioning so far. Mm-hmm. Welsford with DSM, that he hasn't really been able to sprint yet.
Well, it's because of the roundabouts.
Obviously they're struggling with the roundabouts. We'll get to that as well. FDJ, they have no chance to win. Gudu's GC is gone. Stefan Kung, Olivier Lagac exist. Arkea, they have been putting a rider in the break, so credit to them, despite Mozzato actually top-tenning. And there's a long list of teams like that, and I think Andreas Klier was interviewed, and he was thinking the same way I did. Amador was supposed to get into a break of 15. They thought a strong Rouleur break would go, because same with Bora Hansgrohe, Benji, Jordi Meus, he has no chance. Now, I know Bahrain, Jumbo, UAE, Bora, they do have GC to think about.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue actually a break going all the way maybe reduces the hectic in the final 5Ks if the break eventually wins. I'm not sure. But yeah, I really was surprised that more teams didn't want to put pressure on. Israel, I give a pass to. They went full gas yesterday with two guys, but Simon Clark in this break. So yeah, because you can still sprint with your sprinter. And it's not like all these sprinters are on their own in the final 1500 anyway. You can still go for you. Like, Mozzato's done it twice now. Still go with your sprinter. So just make Alpecin do something.
Agreed. Anyway, from that point onwards, after your end, we've got a bit of a funny moment in the race. A moment that caused a bit of uproar on social media. We had one of those, like, team radio thingies pop up on screen by UAE Team Emirates, and it basically said, time for Plan C, everybody jump the tiger. When the crocodiles have to swim, you jump. And when I read that, I completely died, because, like, either they're using some kind of code, but I'd much more likely think that they're just trolling people at this point.
I mean, they could be talking about Jumbo Visma as the tiger.
Or the crocodile.
And Bora the crocodiles. No, I think they're just messing around. They knew that was going to be on TV. Luke, our producer, said that what are the teams getting paid for the radio? 5K each?
5K, correct.
I mean, and do they have veto rights over it? Because nothing really serious gets... It's on a serious delay as well.
There's basically like a group of people behind the scenes that have to check whether something is viable to be broadcasted and hinders the team's tactics and to evolve. And we have seen pretty light stuff so far. And this is one of the only ones that I actually found interesting, because it was funny. Because all the rest is kind of like a random sentence being said in a car that you would expect to be said in a car that doesn't mean anything.
The Void interviews are good when he's on the bike. I enjoy them. I actually think they like the interview with Clear. Anyway, I took a siesta at this point, you know, so I'm not complaining. I'm just saying I don't understand the team. I'm not complaining. We had another rest day today. You know, I didn't have to watch until the final. And so I went to sleep. I always feel weird when I wake up from a mid-afternoon nap. And I mean proper sleep. I was asleep for an hour. And anyway, in my dream, right, I went to a Spanish class. I was like, Spanish language class, it's just me, right? And Lawson Craddock walks in. Lawson Craddock walks in. I go over, I say, hi, I'm Patrick. And he shakes my hand, just death stares me. And I was like, why would Lawson Craddock be angry with me? And it's like, have I ever said bad things about Lawson Craddock? And I was like, why is this in my psyche? Because I remember, like, obviously, you know, I put the mortgage on him in a head-to-head in the Olympics TT, and I think he finished behind the refugees on road bikes. But I don't think I got too angry about it. So I don't know. Okay. But he also, it wasn't him in my dream. Like, that's just my mind. So he might not have a problem with me. So I don't know. I was really frazzled, got back up, and yeah, came back for the intermediate sprint. Phillipson wins again, and Coquard is up there again. So hey, they just keep, yeah.
I thought Coquard was going to win it. He had a proper lead out Phillipson in the wheel of Coquard.
I think he tries harder.
Phillipson just came around on the last threat. Yeah, Coquard is caring about his intermediate sprints while Phillipson is caring about the finish a bit more. So that's the case there. Lecoq has not destroyed the Cofidis drought yet, at least the Lecoq drought of Cofidis. We obviously had the Lafay victory instead. Anyway, we go forward in the race. Obviously, Phillipson took those points and has a lot of points. Now we'll go back to the green per jersey classification after the stage. But lead out to the sprint was kind of like, I was kind of waiting for stuff to happen, and then at 15k to go, we saw Quickstep go to the front.
But there was talk of crosswinds. There was like at 60k to go, 65k to go, they went through the town. And I was watching it, and commentary was like, oh, super nervous. It's kicking off. It's kicking off. And I was watching it. I was like, the whole peloton's across the road, and they're losing time to Daniel Oss and Amador, who are not trying, who are talking to each other, and Lavelle stopped. Two 45-year-olds who are not trying. They're just chatting like, oh, can you be fucked anymore? And I was like, it's not kicking off. I mean, I wish it had, but yeah, the crosswinds, teams got into front position, blocked it. No one tried to split it. It was chill. And yeah, we got into the sprint again. As you see the Tour de France develop, get deeper into the race, the full gas sprinting to get into position starts later and later and later each sprint stage. Yep. This might have happened, I swear, in stage three, this started happening at 50k to go. Now it's happening at 20k to go, 17k to go.
Yeah, but you do see patterns develop, as in teams that couldn't find their way to the front at the end of stages before, in sprint stages before, might try a bit earlier. Meanwhile, teams that went a bit early last time around, they try a bit later, and you see that a tiny bit that shifting, because Quickstep was at the front with 12, 13k to go this time around, with 4 or 5 riders, which that's pretty early to have 4 or 5 riders at the front. That's basically DSM territory. But talking about DSM, DSM took over 2 kilometers later with 6 riders at the front. So you see them, I'd argue that DSM went a bit later than usual, because I swear that they often go 15k to go with 6 riders in my memory. But these two trains are just trying to keep their position to the front. But in reality, you know that if you're at the front at that time, it's very likely that you're spending energy with your first rider and someone else will come around and you don't want to waste your second rider yet because you want to keep them for a bit later. And then they lose position again because both Quickstep and DSM lose positions there. And then you see those four other trains, Bahrain, Alpecin, Trek, Lotto, all trying to get themselves to the front. But one question for you. We see at certain points in sprints, for example, today with 7K to go, one rider from a team, this time it was Israel, go to the front without their lead out, without their entire team behind them. No one's there from Israel. Maybe in 10th, 11th position, there's an Israel rider. And they start pacing for 500 meters and then disappear for the rest of the race, that one rider. What is the point in that? Because they're not positioning their team. They're helping other teams in basically saving energy. You're not putting any pressure on other teams to keep positioning at the front, right?
I guess the idea is they move up, they hope the guy stays on their wheel, they look back, oh shit, he's not there. And then they kind of, I don't know, hope he's somewhere moving up. But yeah, you do see that a lot. It's really hard to keep six guys in a line,
yep,
in a vertical line in the peloton. It's actually impossible to do six guys. Like, it's not possible. Yeah, the guys are going to get cut off at some point. They're going to go through a corner and they're going to lose positions and then they're going to box because they're actually deep. Six is deep in the peloton. So you kind of want three, four guys max. That's what Alpecin have really had in the final three, four Ks of this stage. But they didn't get it right today either. Maybe MVDP is a little bit off. But yeah, we see all that fighting. Ewan looks, I will say though, Lotto have kept Ewan in good position for Du Bois being crashed, for Guarnieri, yeah, being out. I would say they have done a pretty good job up to 2Ks. In fact, today even deeper for Ewan.
Yeah.
I think they've done a really good job for him. So anyway, 6-7Ks to go. It's apparently a very technical run, and we've had rain. Jumbo Visma launch it with Van Hooydonk to the point where there's virtually splits. Pogacar, I would say, him and UAE really playing Russian roulette today. Pogacar was very, very deep with 6Ks to go. And I think it's the right thing to do, actually. Because Bjerg is dropped. Bjerg, yeah, literally was dropped. Pogacar's option is sit at the back with a meter gap in front of him with his cat-like reflexes and avoid crashing and, you know, have a clear view in front of him. He's not in the melee, saving energy. Option B, the Roglic, is you panic and you try and move up the inside amongst the sprint teams with no teammates around you. Bad stuff can happen to you. In fact, that did happen to Pogacar where Jayco closed him in Denmark to the, yeah, barriers and he nearly broke his hand last year. So he's doing that. The risk is obviously if there's a mass pile up outside of 3Ks to go in front of him, which thank God didn't happen, he's losing 30 seconds. So, but yeah, that's the game. He doesn't really have an option because he doesn't. Trentin and Bjerg and Langen can't do it.
When it comes to Quickstep now, we're getting towards the last 4 kilometers, like you mentioned. Jumbo was taking that control that you mentioned. When it comes to Quickstep, I just see riders losing wheels everywhere. I see Asgreen on one side of the road. I see Jakobsen on the other side of the road with Lampard trying to come past him to keep him in position. Then Asgreen is basically gone after that because he's not with his train anymore, so he retreats backwards. And Alaphilippe, I always see solo. I don't necessarily see him with another train surrounding him. So
he was solo in the moto circuit too, right?
Exactly. And Mirko is just nowhere to be seen in the last few sprints. I feel like Mirko has not been a viable part in this sprint, but I also don't know if I can blame him or whether it's Jakobsen losing wheels or whether it's everybody losing wheels, but they've been very uncompetitive in positioning Jakobsen.
For sure, and it's tough to say because, you know, we've seen many times this year and the last year, Mirko moves up, Jakobsen's not on his wheel. And so is he doing a lot of hand-holding where he's trying to move up? Jakobsen's not there. He stops. He goes back to him. He tries to move up, and by that point, he's fucked. I don't know. But yeah, Van Hooydonk pins it on the right-hand side. He's got Laporte in the wheel, then Vingegaard, Van Aert, virtually splits it, and huge acceleration. And then they get past 3Ks. He keeps going a little bit, 2.5Ks, and then Laporte gets the front. And I was like, this is... Now Laporte's eating a lot of wind. Like, he's not soft-pedaling. He's still pedaling, but he's not going full. But he's also supposed to be the last man for Wout. And then he gets waved over, and this is what they've done quite well. They adopt a really good position because Alpecin get all jumbled up today. There's no Van der Poel really. Søren Krogh had been used early. I think it was Rickard at 1.1.
Yeah.
Du Bois, second wheel. then Laporte, Van Aert, Ewan Phillipson, Mayus, Pedersen, Deepa, and co. And it's all looking good for Jumbo-Visma. This is looking good for Wout Van Aert. He's got Phillipson not on his wheel. He's got three last men in front of him with just 60 seconds left. That should be enough. And then Albazin pulls off. Du Bois goes. Alesson and Laporte's going to go. And he doesn't. They get waved across. Sturven on the one side, on the left, with Pedersen in the wheel. Mez gets big lead out for Groenewegen. And it's the same as the other day, Benji, where Laporte, he either needs to go earlier or he needs to flick Van Aert onto another wheel. Because what happened again today is waved across. Laporte basically boxes Van Aert in, sprint over. And Groenewegen's coming with huge speed. This is the best opportunity for him with Mezges. I think Mezges has actually been quite good late in these sprints. He delivered him pretty well the other day. Pedersen, I think, has it come from too deep. Philipsen's on the just surfing wheels. He's got no Van der Poel in front of him. And then Groenewegen just opens up, and I'm thinking he's going to win because Groenewegen's got really top end usually. And when he does get clean air and he's been brought up and he's got he can really win these sprints. And Philipsen just gets into his wheel and then absolutely tortures him. Philipsen wins this sprint. Like, the speed differential in the last 50 meters was crazy. Because for Philipsen to win by a bike length, he's just by far the best guy here. It's not even close. You can't say, oh, Van der Poel gifted it to him today.
Yep.
It's just Philipsen's too good. Winning ahead of Groenewegen, Bauhaus another third. They'll be happy with that. Cockhart fourth, Pedersen fifth, Christoph sixth, Mosato seventh, then Sagan, Van Aert, Welsford. And then, you know, you've got teams that are really going for the sprint today. Mayus 11th, Binnie 13th, Ewan 15th, Jakobsen 16th. So, yeah, like guys like Mosato are almost getting more consistent results than Jakobsen.
Yeah, that's true. And I want to go over a few of those names for a second. Caleb Ewan got basically snatched the exact same way that Laporte did. He was also in that train that got overcome on both sides. And if you're a solo sprinter in that position, it's very hard to adapt to that. You almost need to launch early the first time, get into a wheel of a sprinter that's passing you with momentum, and then hope that you've still got energy to try and sprint again. So from that position, it's very hard to still win from Caleb Ewan. When it comes to Laporte, I feel like the right decision would be launching early, but not at full speed yet. I feel like we've seen this before by Mirko, like a first kick to be able to have momentum so Wout can decide to go on another wheel, or that the lead out, Laporte can decide to still lead them out afterwards, because right now they're basically being torched upon by the waves that come around them, and their race is completely gone. Welsford, another name you mentioned, he was gone at a roundabout again. What's up with Welsford and roundabouts? Like, whoever is planning these sprints, these last 2 kilometers at DSM, needs to figure out how roundabouts work and which side is the fastest, because they always take the wrong side of a roundabout. They did a few days ago where Welsford was sent into the Shadow Realm, exactly the same thing today. So that's just leaving your sprinter in an uncompetitive position. And like, we haven't seen Welsford be competitive in the first place as in this Tour de France whenever he was in position, but they've also made it super hard to begin with for him. So we haven't seen him in true form. And when it comes to Alpecin and Philipsen, Philipsen shows today that he does need Van der Poel. Van der Poel was dropped in the last 2 kilometers off the back of the peloton. He's clearly not in the best shape, I would try and consider, based on that. But Ricard doing a good job at leading the group out. And it feels like sometimes in these situations when Ricard is ahead and then we see Philipsen in sixth position, we sometimes criticize the first rider for keeping up tempo. But if your sprinter is as good as Philipsen in following other riders and being able to make his way to the front regardless of Ricard setting pace at the front, does it often help that Ricard is pacing at 1.1k at the front, sixth position Philipsen? Does it help lining the group out so that Philipsen can come around?
It depends where it is. So obviously Ricard should not do that at 300 to go. If he does that at 350, 400, he is making sure Philipsen can't win, because then Laporte will lead out Van Aert and Ewan or Van Aert will win. But 1k to go with your guy in sixth wheel, it's fine. That keeps the speed up. It stops Trek. It makes it harder for Trek to move up ahead of Philipsen, because maybe Sturven at that point, the speed slows down. He moves Pedersen ahead of Philipsen with that opportunity and that deceleration. So yeah, another sprint. I mean, Philipsen's kind of like, we're not probably talking about enough, Benji, because we obviously thought Philipsen would be the best, but four out of four in the first sprint stages, he could win six sprint stages this tour. He could win over six stages maybe. Like, obviously, I didn't expect that, mainly because I thought teams would stop wanting to get slaughtered in the finish. So, yeah, he's just... Albertsen can't be happier. Four out of the first 11 stages, and in the green jersey battle, he's on 323 points.
That's Pocard's
in second, 150 points behind. So, you know, it's mathematically probably done as long as he doesn't crash out and keeps rolling over. He doesn't even need to win intermediate sprints. If he just rolls over in third or fourth, he's winning green easily.
Do you miss the green jersey battle? Because I feel like I haven't had many years in the Tour de France where there was an actual fight. I recall there being a fight ages ago. Was it, I'm going to Google it while I'm talking about it. It was a fight between, I think, Gilbert and Rojas in 2011 or something. And it might be that none of them actually ended up winning it. Rojas got second in that green jersey classification. Cavendish ended up winning with only 50, 60 points on Rojas, with Gilbert in third on 100 points of Cavendish. So that was one of the years where I was like, damn, that was a year where there was an actual fight. We saw Gilbert going in the break to get points. We saw Rojas going in the break to get points. And we had a pure sprinter coming around and taking it in the end. But do you miss the green jersey battle?
Yeah, it's nice, especially on days like this. You really have to watch the intermediate sprint. Or, you know, days like tomorrow, you really think, okay, is someone with better fitness going to try and get in the breakaway tomorrow and take those intermediate points? So yeah, of course, you know, Philipsen, but he's just too good. Coccard, he just shows the value of consistent results. You know, Bauhaus has three podium results in stages already and another top 10 in these sprints. Like, he's so consistent.
Yeah.
They've done such a good job for him, and he's just so, like, and this whole team's like Quickstep, who have won. I know Jakobsen got crashed by Philipsen, I accept that, but let's not pretend that the positioning problems are solely because he crashed, because they've also been a problem before the crash and throughout the rest of this year. So, we'll see on stages 18 and 19 what,
yeah,
because this is the last sprint stage until next, I think, in a week. It's a week till the next sprint stage.
But I do feel like I have the feeling of a second week. This feels like a pure second week, starting with a breakaway stage. We've got a follow-up with a sprint stage. We've got numerous other breakaway stages coming up, and maybe one GC stage that I've got my eyes on in this week as well. But the majority is likely to be breakaway stage. And I'm like, this is week two of a Grand Tour.
Yeah.
Do you remember at any point in your mind a Grand Tour with a second week that was better than the first week and the third week?
Tour de France last year.
What? Really?
Grenoble, baby.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Grenoble was second week, you're right.
I can't remember the other stages though, which suggests to me that might not have been good.
Was better than all the other stages combined.
What else happened? Can't remember. Stage 15, Jumbo just crashed. Everyone crashed. First week was probably better last year too. I don't know. Second week in 2021 was dire. Ooh, that was rough.
Second weeks. Deadly.
It's a bad memory. Because, no, the difference is, I don't mind breakaways. I love breakaways. The problem in 2021 was they were 50K solos with no one chasing. The breakaway battle yesterday was unbelievable. All day. That was a brilliant stage. But imagine if Nalens went with 60Ks to go and the other guys stopped chasing him. Suddenly a little bit less interesting. That's what happened with Conrad. Yeah, the Chavez 85K. Anyway, speaking of a breakaway stage, tomorrow from Roland to Belleville on Beaujolais, 169 kilometers long. We are heading towards the Alps across the Auvergne-Rhône Alps region, and this is very, very hilly, pretty much up and down all day with the climbs increasing in intensity to the end. First 5K is false flat uphill, then a 4.3K, 3.5% climb, then a 4.5K, 5.6% climb, a category 3 descent, and then another 2K, 6% climb. So the breakaway should form in that first 38, 40 kilometers in the first hour. It'll be a fierce fight for it, and strong climbers can get in that break, but also rouleurs, because they're not the steepest climbs either. It's very similar to the start yesterday. Then another couple of little climbs, then around the intermediate sprint in the valley, about 30 Ks, mostly flat, and then three climbs. This really reminds me of the Conrad Colbrelli-Godou stage in 2021 Tour. 5.2 K, 6% descent, 5.5 K, 6.2% descent, 5.5 Ks, 7.7%. Now we're getting a little bit tougher to the Col de la Croix-Rosière, and that also has bonification seconds on top, 8.52 before a descent, a little uphill kicker with 14Ks to go, and then a flat finish. Do UAE go for the bonies tomorrow, Benji? Is this a breakaway stage? Pog can win the reduced group sprint and take the bonies.
Bernard can also still be in the peloton. So
no chance.
If he's in the break initially, then he can be in the peloton afterwards.
Maybe. I mean, his climbing didn't look too crash hot to me yesterday.
I believe this is a breakaway stage, honestly. And I believe there's numerous riders that will try and go into the breakaway, like 30 riders that will try and go in the breakaway.
No, I agree with you. I'm just saying, could you see UAE possibly trying that?
Trying maybe, but I don't think they'll succeed in controlling the breakaway. So names that I'm mentioning, for example, we've got the likes of Pinot, who will try. It's sure. Also a climby start, so he's got more chance to get in the break than a stage like Grand Colombier, who I would see him trying to get in the break in, but the flat start doesn't help him. Here, the climby start helps him a bit. Ben O'Connor will try again. Mankies yep. might try again as well to get in the breakaway to try and get in the top 10 that way. But
he will try for sure.
Bertin and Madouas are riders that I'm looking forward to tomorrow, especially Madouas on this parkour.
You're not going to let him in the break.
Madouas is going to win this shit.
FDJ were lined up next to Bora and Jumbo and UAE. I was like, guys.
Madouas is going to win this shit, and nobody can stop him.
They're not going to let him in the break. FDJ.
It's happening. I'm sorry.
And maybe you've been speaking to Matteo, and you said, hey, Mark, here's the GC standings.
I don't think he listens to me.
I think anyone from, as you said, anyone from 8th to 20th will be trying to get in the break in GC.
Skelmoser.
Pidcock should try. Pidcock really must try because Bora were very vulnerable yesterday. And I don't think Pollitt, Haller, Van Poppel, and even Jungels, oh, look, that good this tour. They are vulnerable. And I think Pidcock with, and Ineos, I mean, again, how many fucking Grand Tours have I said this where they have two GC leaders and they need to try something a little bit more aggressive? But Pidcock might be the guy to do it because I think he is more aggressive. He, if it's chaotic at the start, uphill, must try and get in the breakaway tomorrow. He's, you know, he's on 5.5 minutes. Vingegaard, Pogacar will not be too concerned about that. They know that it's Bora's job and Bahrain's job and you and Jayco's job to chase. He should try and get in the break and do a Bilbao. And yeah, Lander, like all these guys, Kelderman, Alaphilippe, Woods.
But I do think we're not mentioning some riders that have done well in the last two stages, like Nylands, for example, Kwiatkowski, Jorgensen. Those were riders that were close to a victory so far. So
Zimmermann.
I definitely put them on the page of like these riders can win this stage as well. And I think there's a big chance we've mentioned at least a winner of this stage. But who is your destined winner? Your one man?
Jorgensen.
Okay. Mine is Madouas.
Madouas, okay. They're very similar. They're very, very similar riders.
I guess.
Yeah. Well, somewhat. Top 10 classics, RVV, about the same height, same weight, top 10 stage races, no sprint.
Madouas has a sprint in some occasions. Like when he's racing in Luxembourg, he wins almost every sprint.
Never watched that. Ciccone, Trek will be wanting multiple in. I wonder what Jumbo will do. Could this, is this going to be, because this is harder than yesterday, the finish. So Where's Aaron Brew, Benji? Can you give me an update? Shouldn't he be winning this?
Who is Anamuru? I've never heard of this man. I reject his presence.
It looks good for him. James Shaw for EF will be in. Yeah, it's going to be a big break. So yeah, good luck anyone trying to control it. And that's to round off this podcast, to go back to my rant earlier. It's very curious to me that yesterday, 18 teams killed 3 riders each, tried desperately, desperately to get in the breakaway.
Yeah.
A break which is destined to have absolute killers in it and really strong riders. So their win probability, even top 3 probability, is very low. I'm talking they have Bilbao, O'Connor, GC riders. And yet today, they're like, don't even bother trying. And then tomorrow, I bet you every team will kick off. It makes no sense to me. Anyway, maybe Victor Lefay's climbing. I mean, based on stage 1, we would have said Victor Lefay cleans this from the break, but he's climbing. I don't know where he's been. Maybe he's been conserving. Anyway.
Maybe he could win. It's not impossible.
Yeah, he could win too. Yeah. All right. that's our picks. I forgot. I picked Jorgensen, you picked Madouas. Breakaway win tomorrow, and hopefully it's an exciting stage. I think the first hour is going to be the one to watch. Then it'll settle in, and then the final will be good too. So, oh yeah, you got some other news?
We heard Remco's going to the Vuelta and that Merlier is being left home for it. What's your reaction?
I don't care. I knew Remco was doing the Vuelta, but
yeah,
Merlier must be happy not to go.
Yeah, he probably is. Just staying home, doing the Bene Tour, because we're not acknowledging the Lux part of the Benelux Tour. But
like, he must be on board with it.
Yeah, but the way Lefebvre said it in like Belgian media is like such a weird thing to say, because he called him a brave jongen, which is basically
brave
a good
young
boy.
Man.
A good boy.
Brava doesn't mean brave.
No, it's like good boy, which is kind of a weird thing to say. Like, will Merlier be unhappy? No, he's a good boy. That's so weird to say.
Fair enough. I mean, do they have 7 better riders than Merlier to take?
Well, they probably want an entire team built around Remco.
Doesn't exist yet on that team, the squad, so may as well take Merlier. I mean, I think he's like,
yeah,
meh, I don't want to do 3 weeks anyway. Climbing up mountains, doing that Tourmalet stage. No, thank. Weird news coming out of Quickstep. Wasn't there? Are they trying to sell the team? That's the news.
Yeah.
There was like a scoop from Zonneveld that Lefebvre wants to sell the team and cash out. What is
it's
going on?
It's very mixed.
Are they ruining Remco's career? Hot takes.
I don't have a clue. The thing is, like, we've heard a rumor from Zonneveld, like you mentioned, that that the team was perhaps being sold. Then we heard another rumor that an American investment company actually bought the team for, like, what was it, 15 million that they said? But then Lefebvre came into HLN Belgian media. Okay, I'll give it to you in a second. But then Belgian media, Lefebvre had an interview in there where he said 15 million. Bakala, who is the majority owner of Quickstep, owns 80% of the team. Lefebvre only owns 20% of the team. So he can't decide anything, I'd argue, when it comes to selling the team. It's all Bakala that gets to decide. And it's basically what Lefebvre says in that interview. I can't decide anything, but I'd be shocked if Bakala is interested in just 15 million, because that's peanuts for Bakala, is what Lefebvre says, basically. So that sounds like a denial from that end. But there's so many rumors about it where I'm like, I don't know, man. And there's some rumors about teams trying to bid for Evenepoel in the meanwhile. And then Lefebvre talks about it like it's actually true. And man, I don't fucking know, man.
Under contract next year, they have 9 riders. Under contract in 25, they have 3 riders. Like, it all points to the fact that they're not signing long-term deals. It looks to me like Lefebvre wants to cash out. Now, I think he's got a rude surprise coming to him, and the fact is that cycling teams are not profitable businesses, and 15 million, you'll be lucky, I think. I mean, maybe they do get it. Good for them, because Remco's contract's so valuable, but Sky sold the Ineos team for £1, I think. £1. They just won.
Symbolically.
They just won 4 Tour de France's or whatever. All these races. And the team, the company that owned the team and the World Tour license, worthless. They literally said it has no value. So, because the actual assets these teams have are the rider contracts, which you could also say are a liability, depending on whether over or under, some coats, some buses, and some stuff. So and so the sponsorship contracts. So 15 million for the liability to have to pay 25 million every year. I don't know. Anyway, we'll see. But I don't think it doesn't sound to me like a stable ship with a long-term vision for Remco. It doesn't sound like that to me at all. So could Remco be going? Maybe in the off-season we'll have an emergency pod, Benji. Ineos will bring him in. I mean,
what is the weirdest team that Remco could go to?
Intermarché. It would actually make sense. Intermarché would make sense. Visbeek, Belgian. He speaks French and Dutch.
Visbeek, Belgian?
No, the team is Belgian. Visbeek's actually competent.
They don't have the money.
I mean, Remco is not getting paid more than a lot of riders, so.
Yeah, but
he probably want to get an upgrade. The weirdest team. Jumbo. Imagine.
Bardiani.
Him and Van Aert attacking each other in races.
Yeah.
Ineos the one that makes the most sense.
Yeah, it makes the most sense. And Thomas, rumors of extension now for 2 years.
Two years.
They have someone, but it's not a future vision either, eh? When it comes to the rest of the team, there's not really that person that has the future laying in front of him for GC at the moment either. Because
Rodriguez might put in this tour and he's going to leave.
Yeah. If he indeed leaves, then he's gone. Hart's supposedly leaving to Trek. So
yeah,
Bernal isn't really showing that he will go to the top step again. Martinez isn't showing that he can do it at all.
And he's gone, probably.
Who the fuck else exists in that team?
Sivakov's gone, most likely. So they're cleaning house. And so, yeah, the space for him. So that would make the most sense. But yeah, we'll see. Anyway, that was our pod today. A bit of news in the background. A lot of extensions announced, like Nalens and the other rider, that Bill Bauer. I presume they were already signed before and they just were like, this is a great time to announce it. But yeah, a lot of transfer stuff. And that's going to heat up in 3 weeks where all of them will get announced. So I can't wait for that at the start of August. But thanks for listening as always. Let me know what dream you had last night in the comments down below. And we'll see you tomorrow. Ciao.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.